I was accountant and secretary and general factotum. Whatever needed doing between us, Miss Cowles and I did.
And you were the key people, really?
We were the key people. Well, that comes out occasionally in the books of Dennis Richards and Diana Hopkinson's, although she didn't waste any time on us. Her story was Mrs. Hubbard, naturally.
How did you actually get there in the first place, Mr. Cottrell? I mean, how did you start off?
Well, the job was advertised in the Times Educational Supplement. The time I was assistant secretary to a technical college in Huddersfield in Yorkshire. And it attracted me, the political side, Morley College for working men and women. That hit me just there.
You believed in adult education?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. And I was called up for interview by Barbara Wooten and the then chairman of the college council, Major Chettle, a gentleman if ever there was one, and I was offered the job. So at 24 hours notice, we had to pack up and move.
Barbara Wooten had quite a clear out, didn't she, of staff? I mean, it was quite a revolution, wasn't there, when she came?
Well, I don't know, the secretary who was there when she arrived took ill and died on her inside 12 months. That's when she had to fire somebody else. And she found me, and that that was that. Of course, Morley didn't particularly interest Barbara Wooten.
She was on her way to other things.
On her way to other things. Yes. Even while she was there, you see, she was appointed by the government to a commission on monetary policy or something, and spent. When she got the invitation, and I saw her the next day, and she said, "Whether you like it, George, or not, I'm going. I'm not going to waste this opportunity. It's just what I'm after." I said, "All right, you can leave it with me. I'm quite prepared to look after things in your absence." She went, and shortly after that, she got the other job at the university. Incidentally, that post of the university was in charge of the extramural work, tutorial classes, extension courses and what have you. And we ran quite a lot of those at the college, at Morley.
Did you really? So she didn't lose her contact?
Oh, no. She developed her contacts, actually. Mm. And just at that time, they were appointing a new officer at the university and said, "Why didn't I apply for it?" Well, I thought I'd apply, but I didn't think I stood a chance of getting it. And they wanted an assistant, too, and Miss Cowles applied for the assistant's job. Our applications, we both went up for interview, and she was offered the assistant's post. I mean, they knew what they were getting, and she'd have fitted that job. On the other hand, it would have been a bit too starchy for her, I think. Mm. Well, she began to think so, too. Mm. And when I was made an also-ran, she decided that we were probably much happier at Morley College, and as it turned out, I think we were.
So you were secretary to the principal, were you?
No, I wasn't.
Were you, really?
I was a clerk to the council, bursar, college secretary, general factotum.
You were the centre of the administration?
All the administrative work. Well, there wasn't any other administration, you see, apart.
We were
the administration. The only other people involved were members of the cleaning staff and canteen staff and doorkeepers and caretakers and whatnot. But just the two people ran the administration.
So Miss Cowles was what then?
She was the principal's assistant.
I see, yes.
First and foremost, so that Mrs. Hubbard were away for any time, she took over the organising responsibility.
She was assistant also to Lady Wootton, was she, as well? I mean, before Edith came?
No.
Ah.
No, there was a shorthand typist there when I arrived. Just an occasional shorthand typist, as required.
Yes, I see.
Who used to come in and type letters for Barbara Wootton.
Yes.
And I had to do my own typing in the early days, anyhow. Yes. Then when Mrs. Hubbard came along, of course, and brought her...
She brought Miss Cowles with her?
Miss Cowles with her, practically. Not for the... She had two or three from adverts, tried out from adverts. And it was obviously hopeless. I mean, they just weren't her type.
Yes, what was her type? And what she was
very efficient and shut things off and expected people to. Well, she expected first class brains, and in the average run of the mill and the market at that time, you couldn't get them in London. The girls that came, or the young women that came, wanted a soft option, and they wouldn't have stood it for 5 minutes, and she wouldn't have, she stood in for less than that. I mean, it was, oh no, you won't do, and that's that. And when Miss Cowles came down, the situation was transformed. Mrs. Hubbard and she had worked together in Dean's Yard for years.
In the National Union, you mean?
National Union,
yes.
And Mrs. Hubbard knew her worth before she brought her to Morley. And my goodness, Morley soon found her worth too. Oh, she was a genius. In
tell me about her. What was she really good at then, Miss Cowles?
Miss Cowles?
Yes.
Read my little...
efficient?
Very efficient indeed. Efficiency personified, but it never showed itself. I mean, there's nothing else. She was one of us, you see, and we were all friends.
She didn't give herself airs?
No airs and graces whatsoever.
Mm. And she was very sharp-minded, was she? Intelligent?
Very intelligent, yes. Yeah. First-rate intelligence.
Yeah.
Well, she deserved much... a much better job than even principal's assistant, but she never got the opportunity, or at least she could have found the opportunity if she'd wanted it, but she didn't. She was happy where she was.
She believed in adult education.
She believed in adult education, and she believed in Morley College. When she got into the working in Morley, like myself and like a lot of other people involved, you become so attached to the place and its purpose. It's alive, you see, and it's a natural thing. Morley College is the cat's whiskers.
Of course, Lady Wootton never had time, really.
Never had time to get to that. Feeling at all.
Whereas Eva did she, do you think?
To a certain extent, she could see that there was something in this Morley spirit. Even Dennis Richards and now Barry Till found, after a few short months in the job, that this Morley spirit that was on everybody's lips who came to Morley and stayed at Morley. And after all, you've got students there who've been members of the college, or some from the time of the Waterloo Road days, you see.
So there's a loyalty to
there's the... There's a loyalty to the college, and Morley knew, Morley meant something to them, and still does to any amount of them.
So can you describe how your job related to Miss Cowles' job? And what Miss Cowles typed letters for the principal, did she?
She did whatever Mrs. Hubbard wanted down, you see, and interviewed staff on occasion when Mrs. Hubbard was away, and Well, you read the books, you realise how much Mrs. Huppock was away. She travelled extensively, you know. And for a teacher or for a head of an institute in London, that always struck me as incredible, that she was never cross-questioned about it at all, at County Hall level. You see, we were an aided institute. We weren't maintained by the council. We received a grant from them, and we had to conform to certain principles of accounting and whatnot, and they made us a very substantial grant. But no principal of any other adult institute in the London area would have dared to absent himself or even apply for leave to go abroad. Sometimes she did, sometimes she didn't. She asked her own counsel.
Yes. How did she get away with it, do you think? Did she have charm, or was she just a very invaluable person to them?
She was invaluable. She had charm, and she could wrap some of the people around her fingers, you see. She never, as far as I was concerned, she knew darn well that in her absence the college would carry on whether she was there or not.
Because she could rely on you,
she could rely
and
on
Miss Cowles.
Miss Cowles, particularly, and me secondarily. Mm. And she travelled north, south, east and west. She'd been to America twice, I think. She'd been to Russia.
She went to Malta, of course.
Malta, yes, yes. Well, there she had official backing too from the naval authorities, you see, when she went to Malta. And she was always dashing off somewhere. But as I say, she did all that was necessary at Morley. She held the place together, and she didn't put up with any but the best of staff, teaching staff and lecturing staff and whatnot. She knew what she wanted, and she had the ability to select and shed it.
Did she? I mean, how did she know who was good if she was not often there? I mean, did you have a very efficient reporting mechanism on staff? I mean,
No. She got to know them through friends outside the college. And she knew everybody who was anybody in the political and economic and adult education world. And when she wanted a lecturer on any subject, she knew who to go to ask who'd be the best for this job, you see. And she'd have a list of suggestions and interview them all and decide which was the best for our purpose. In that way she found, and of course the university supplied quite a lot of tutors, tutorial classes and extension course lectures and so on. Dr. Jode was a marvellous case in point. Well, he came there as a tutor and for the tutorial courses. I attended one of his tutorial groups for 5 years, 5-year course.
You actually went on courses yourself?
Yes. At the college, I'd take an hour off in the evening to go to his talks. And he and I got to be as thick as friends. Because fundamentally he was a bit of a rogue, you know.
Oh, yes. A
charlatan, so much a...
But that's part of the Morley spirit, that the administrative staff also attend courses. Did Miss Cowles attend courses?
He never seemed to get the time, like.
I see, yes.
I mean, if Mrs. Huppock wasn't there, she had to be about for. Mm. Whereas in my case, if I wasn't there, Miss Cowles would step in and act for me as well.
I see. So she was a king pin?
Oh, she was a treasure, absolute treasure. It's a pity. She left college to train as a secretary. She could very well have stuck it, except that her mother died when she should have really been going to college, and she had to look after her father until he died. And she devoted herself to Morley and her father, and that was Miss Cowles.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was a child of strength himself, a fine chap.
Who was he? Who was her father, actually? What did he do?
Oh, he was... his interest was in science. What he did, he was one of the first to experiment at home with wireless television.
Was he?
And, oh yes, he was receiving the first of the television on his on set he made up for himself out of bits and pieces.
So she lived with her father?
Oh yes, 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 yes. They had a house in Ilford, in Essex. Oh, I used to go along and have a cup of tea with the old boy very many times. The way she survived him alone, her mother seemed to pass out of it without much demonstration of emotion or anything else. And she realised then that she had to look after the old boy, and he was a masterpiece in himself, there's no question about that.
Well, why do you admire him so much? Because he was so active, you mean, in his old age?
He was active right up to the week of his death, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And he tried to inculcate in me some knowledge of these new processes and whatnot. He made me up a little television set at the time, but I could never get, I was never trained in scientific jargon or theories. And he talked to me about it, and there's another thing, he collected watches. Old movements and watches. And he had an unrivaled collection, which I think Miss Carroll ultimately gave to the Horological Institute, would it be?
Could be, yes. I don't know that.
I know she was in touch with them after he died, because she said they were too valuable to be left about the house in her absence. And she called in secretary of the institute, and he agreed with her that, and said that they'd be more than delighted to take charge of them. And I think without any more to do, she handed them over. She had a sister, a married sister, who had a family. They lived entirely to themselves. So, I mean, she was very fond of her sister, who was older than she was, but.
Her life was Morley and her father.
Yes, yes, yes.
So, really, what's happened is that Eva's got... Let me move this a bit more out of your way. Eva's got two very, very skillful and dedicated people who can be relied on to keep the thing moving while she roves around and does her other things.
Yes, yes. And what she didn't do is nobody's business. I mean, she had a finger in all the political and economic pies in the country, right?
Of course, that's good for Morley Cottage, isn't it, as well?
So,
I mean,
yes.
It's not, in a way, to say she's away a lot doing these things isn't necessarily contradictory with her being a very
not
good
at all,
principal,
not
is
at
it,
all.
Really?
She took Morley, she broadcast Morley to the world, quite literally, and we couldn't do it, I couldn't have done it, couldn't have attempted it. We helped a lot during the war when we had the... Do you know anything about the ABCA courses? And
as I've heard about those.
I've heard about them. Mm. Well, we did a lot of the organising for that at Morley. Mm. And that again was Eva Hubbard brought them to us, and we organised them.
Because it seems to me your relationship with Miss Cowles then is absolutely central, and you got on well with her, partly because you were both dedicated to Morley College.
Yes, yes.
Partly because you knew her father and you mixed socially in a way as well.
Yes, I did.
What else? How else did you get on? I suppose you weren't ever... You just set out to get on with each other, did you? I mean...
It really became quite natural. I mean, we were sometimes called the terrible twins. And I was looked upon as something of a... Not an ogre exactly, but I was off-putting very often. Now, Margaret Cowles was never off-putting. She was friendly with everybody. She protected me against...
I see. So you were a good team, in a way.
We were a good team. There's no doubt about that. And that is mentioned by both Dennis Richards and the... And in the other one.
So do you think, I mean, is that partly due, well, it is partly due to Eva's good management, that you were both there and that you got on with each other, is it? I mean,
yeah.
Partly.
She was, I don't say she took advantage of it, but there it was. Very useful indeed. Mm. We know that, and we knew it all along. Mm. But we never... took advantage of it, and she never took advantage of the fact either. Mm. We were with Eva Hubbock, and Eva had so many other things to consider, so many other organizations in which she was interested, that she was happy
to delegate.
To know. She knew that Morley was safe in all respects.
Because that's one of the things about Eva, she starts things off and leaves people to make them grow.
Exactly.
Did you feel that when you were working for her?
We knew that. We could see it. And of course, Miss Cowles had evidence of that from the fact that she'd worked with Eva at Dean Jarre for many years from leaving school. And of course, Eva knew down well that she and Miss Cowles and Morley. She was quizzing.
Tell me, can you put your mind right back to when Eva first arrived? What sort of impression do you think she made when she first arrived?
Well, it's a very interesting point there, that when the appointment was made, the last talk I had with Barbara Wooten before she left us, she said, "Oh, by the way, George," said, "now's your opportunity. If you want to get rid of any of the work that you're saddled with, now is your opportunity. Let Mrs. Hubbock think it's her job, you see." Well, she didn't know Mrs. Hubbock. And I couldn't have parted with any of the work I was doing. But Barbara knew that when she came in, you see, she didn't tackle anything on my side of the organisation at all. Mm. She left all the accounting work and the registration and...
This is Eva you're talking about?
No,
Barbara.
Barbara.
Mm, yes.
She was only there a very short time, but she had the whole thing at her fingertips like that.
Yes. Mm.
And when she went, Eva had to take it over, in theory. But she let it... She still carried on with the jobs which she was interested in, and... We had talks together about what to do and given circumstances. And I had nothing whatever to do with the appointment of staff. That was her pigeon entirely. Plus the college council, of course, which she had to report to. But it was her... Of course, I did read somewhere that she was... thought to be absent-minded.
Well, she used to go to sleep in meetings, didn't she?
Well, she did. But the funny thing about it, I've seen her dozing in a meeting, and obviously sound asleep, dozing and then dozing. But the funny thing is that as soon as that lecturer came to the end of the lecture, she woke up on the last word and she was with it. That happened repeatedly.
You said that Barbara Wootton got on top of the job, all sides of it, in a short
very
time.
Quickly, yes.
Did Eva get on top as quickly as that?
No, I think Eva took much longer, probably, but only because she'd so much other work on hand. I mean, fancy a principal of an institute like Morley standing as a Labour candidate in the local and national elections. Mm. And it would, in the LCC or the GLC service, that sort of thing was just unheard of. But finally, you see, she was elected to the London County Council.
Yes. So she's her own employer.
Exactly. She was. In that sense, she was. And some of the principals of the other institutes weren't altogether pleased with it, you see. They were, why should she be allowed to do this? Why should she chase off to the Far East and the Middle East? But County Hall was quite happy about it.
But anyway, when she first arrived, then was she quite well received? She wasn't very well known then, was she?
No, she was. But both Mrs. Wootton and Barbara Wootton and Mrs. Hubbard were shy. Barbara Wootton, particularly in the early days. See, she wasn't very old when she took on Morley.
No.
And I shall never forget, she had a room off the common room. I'd show you which room if we went through the photos. But she had her desk in this other room. That was her sanctum. And the office, so-called, there was no office. We had two desks out in the common room. It was our job to receive students and staff out there, you see.
So you didn't have a proper office at all?
Not a proper office at all.
I see. Mm.
We kept our books and things in her sanctum, in a cupboard inside her room. But one of the first times, if she wanted me, you see, going into her office, she'd say, can you spare me a minute, George? And I'd go in. But once in, she wanted the door left open. She'd never have anybody in the room, particularly a man, you see.
Mm.
Which was funny in view of the fact that she finally married George Wright. You remember, you don't know about him.
No.
He was a London taxi driver.
Was he then?
Huh?
Good Lord.
And used to attend her lectures, economics and whatnot, tutorial groups. And they sort of got on very well together and ultimately got married. And she nursed him through his last illness.
I didn't realize that. She wasn't very happily married, was she?
Well, she lost her first husband, of course, within a few days of marriage.
Oh, George Wright was her second husband?
Yes.
Oh, I see, yes.
Yes, her husband was killed in France up there.
Of course.
Very early on. Mm. It's funny, they were both made widows from the war.
First war, yes.
Casualties, you see.
Yes. And you say that Eva really didn't come to the job because of Morley College. She came to the job because she just needed some money as a widow.
Well, I imagine that was. I'm talking about the book. I don't know. But
yes.
From what I've read of Diana Hopkinson's book and whatnot, she was obviously...
She was.
Well, she had to face up to the fact that she was raising a family and running a house. And mind you, she wasn't without money.
Mm.
The family background was Spielman, you know. He was
quite well off. Jews.
Very well off, yes. Very well off.
Yes.
Where she upset the apple cart was by marrying a Gentile.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm.
She had, of course, one of the things that I think David said to me was that she had this extraordinary capacity for mobilising people.
She did,
You know, she had contacts everywhere.
Everywhere, yes. She made it, whether it made it her business or not, she had the contacts. She was so mixed up with various movements and was ready to speak on any occasion, on any subject, and could always put her finger on the right person for the right job at the right time, And then they could get on with the job as far as she was concerned. She went off on some other tack.
Yes, that absolutely fits with what people have told
me. Oh, yes.
But when she came to Morley College, did she have ideas about what it should do, or did she just carry it on, really?
Well, she examined it. She went through the history of the place, you see, and the work that was being done there. And she had ideas and tried them out, and if they came off, well, let's carry on with that. And if they weren't immediately successful, well, we'll forget that for a time, try something else.
Could you suggest things to her? Could she take suggestions?
Oh, Lord, yes. She was willing to take suggestions from anyone and everyone. And she was never too busy to listen to you. If you wanted to talk about anything at all, come in. And of course, if anybody else came in while you were there, do mind, George, I should be busy for it. We got on very well together, but she never interfered on the organisational side and the administrative side. And of course, we had nothing, but I had nothing to do with the tutorial work or teaching stuff at all.
And anyway, because you got on so well with Miss Cowles, there wasn't any friction, really?
There was never any friction at all. How many years was she with us? From 1929 to
20 years.
Yes. Yes. We never had words and never had trouble of any kind.
How did she organise her day? Because she stayed at Golders Green in the mornings, didn't she?
She was at Morley whenever she was needed there, but she was an early riser. I mean, she must have been up half the night. Only so could she keep up with the 101 jobs that she was interested in. Mm. She'd be on Hampstead Heath and getting fresh air and whatnot, while most people have just gone to bed, kind of thing. And she was a character. That's all right.
But so could you ring her up at Hampstead then? If you wanted her.
Oh, necessary, yes.
Yes, I see. Yes. But she didn't appear on the scene until, what, the afternoon?
Late afternoon as a rule. Mm. Early evening.
We were an
evening college with very little doing in the daytime at all, other than office work, and minutes and that sort of thing, of council meetings and but she was never there for that sort of thing. She only came in and she'd make appointments to meet people at Morley, you see, time and time again, and would pop in at all hours to see people. If anybody came in, Mrs. Huppigan, she's expecting me, Miss Carroll just look after her until she arrived.
Yes, because she wasn't punctual, was she?
Anything but. She did her best, but I'm losing things, but she had a remarkable habit of being able to find things that she'd lost. And the number of times she'd lost her glasses in the tube or on the buses. And she'd only got to go to the lost property office and they'd be there waiting for her. It's staggered one sometimes. Well, I mean, if I'd lost my glasses, they'd have been gone for good and all.
But didn't that make things difficult for you? Because you were the administrator, really. Mm. Surely you needed a principal who was very good with paperwork, didn't you? I mean, how did you get over that?
We never seemed to have any difficulty. That wasn't the paperwork. I mean, that was. Miss Cowles, for instance, would take shorthand notes of anything Mrs. Hubbard wanted a note made of, and could always produce them at a minute's notice.
Mm. So Miss Cowles really organised Eva, in a sense.
She organised Eva to perfection. You hit the nail on the head, and without it being in any way obvious at all. And I think, above everything else, Eva knew that, and knew that she was being organised, but she appreciated the fact that without that organisation, without Miss Calvers's work in the organising, she could have been in trouble. Well, she was very lucky indeed, although I say it shouldn't have, to step into a job like that where she could more or less please herself what she did, where she went, how she got on. Mm. It was up to the two of us to look after her, which we did, and I think we did it reasonably well.
I'm sure you did. But so you, what were your hours then, Mr. Cottrell? Did you
I used to get there normally, but I caught a train from. I was living in. I finally got a place down in Surrey, in Clayhate. And I'd leave home at 1 o'clock and get home at 11 at night.
I see, later. So you had the mornings off, really?
I had the mornings off normally, unless there was anything special I had to do.
What would that be, Monday to Friday or.
Well, Saturday.
Monday to Saturday?
Mm-hmm. Mm. Well, Saturday, of course, was. The college was open for student activity, not classes in those days, in any case. We didn't worry about Saturday classes, other than in the later years of Eva's run, when we had a started theatre school. There was no room in the ordinary curriculum, no time in the curriculum, for the theatre school. It had to be fitted in all the corners, and Saturday afternoons and evenings.
So would Eva be there from really every evening, unless she was travelling, Monday to Saturday?
Not Saturday unless there was something special. But most evenings she'd put in an appearance. Maybe late afternoon she'd come and have a cup of tea there and then said that she was going to a theatre or something of that sort and would disappear.
You feel she kept her eye on?
Oh, things. She kept her eye on things, yes. Well, Miss Cowes made sure she did. Mm. Mm.
How did she get on with the students?
Oh, as far as we knew, very well.
I don't quite know, you see, I don't know Morley from the inside, but...
No.
What's the principal meant to do with the students? I mean, it's an unusual setup in a way, isn't it?
It was. You see, she had two students. There was a representative committee of students. And two of that committee were appointed to the college council. And in effect, they were two of the principals. Watching the principal.
I see, yes.
They were responsible people. Mm. The men and women who... They called it Morley College for Working Men and Women, and you got all sorts and conditions in that 3,000 or so members a year. Mm. And there was never any trouble with them at all.
So she doesn't teach them directly herself.
No, no.
And she doesn't sort of address them collectively.
No, exactly. She would like to be invited to the meetings of the students' committee. They met once a month in the one evening, and they'd let her know that the meeting was taking place and that if she'd like to attend, she'd be welcome. Occasionally, she'd go along, sit in, and hear what the students were proposing to do. And she used the students, of course, right, left and centre.
Did she?
Mm. Well, on raising money for various internal projects. And she'd only got to go to the students' committee or meet the chairman of the committee or the secretary of the committee and talk things over in her office one time. And they would either agree or disagree. If they disagree, she'd want to know why and wherefore. And if they agreed with what she was suggesting, they'd raise it at the next meeting of the committee and the matter was smoothed over and they'd start raising money. And that's developed along various lines because Richards, in his day, relied very largely on student committee members, and on the committee of the Friends of Morley, which was an organisation he started with the idea of raising funds for the,
the
benefit of the new building.
Yes. So she delegates to the students as well as to you, and
she's
delegating all the way around.
Yeah, she's delegating all the time. If she wanted anything doing, that she thought we should do internally, I personally, or and certain things she left absolutely to me was the organisation and administration of the sports ground. Well, I was, among other things, I was instrumental in finding a sports ground for the college and getting our then chairman, Major Chettle, chap I think was the nicest man I ever met in my life, to back me in putting a scheme forward for taking on a farmer's field at Eltham, which is 7 miles out of London. It was then.
Yeah.
Just a farmer's field.
Good investment, I should have thought.
Well, her point is we had to rent it from the Crown land.
Oh, I see, yes.
We couldn't buy it, wasn't for sale.
Yeah.
But he had friends in the Crown Lands organisation, and they thought it was this Morley College for working men and women, a good idea. And they let us have this 4-acre field, provided we towed the line in respect to it. It was quite a small rent, but we had to find accommodation. We had to go to the City Parochial Foundation for the money to build a pavilion down there for the use of the membership. And that still exists, the pavilion. Whether the students still use it to that extent, I don't know. But
How did she, Eva, get on with the council? I mean, she managed them well as well.
Oh, very well indeed.
Did she?
Well, there again, you see, she brought new members onto the council. She knew very well. In Marjorie Fry, for instance, was one. Her sister, Winifred. Yeah. She brought people onto the council, the governing council, who knew her and knew about the college and were interested. Oh, she had a genius for choosing the right people.
But the council came, what was it, once a month? Did they come to Morley to meet once
a month? Oh yes, they met at the college.
Yes. That was the only time they came to the college, usually, was it? On those occasions?
Well, they were invited, of course, to come whenever they could spare the time, and one or two of them did make a point of popping in occasionally. But in general, attendance once a month. And she attracted the right... Well, David Layton was another she brought onto the council. A chap called Milliken. Do you remember the name at all?
No.
He was BBC.
Oh, yes.
She brought him in, you see, and
he
was useful. And the old prospectus will give you... I don't think I've got a copy handy.
I can find that out.
Well, you
but anyway, she gets people who are going to be useful to the college and who will get on with her.
Yes, indeed. Really. Yes, yes. Mm. Oh, she wouldn't have, would she? She wasn't likely to have anybody on the college council who wasn't going to be useful to us. And 9 times out of 10, her appointments proved useful. In, of course, 1 or 2 appointments, like 2 members of the London County Council, were nominated to serve on the college council.
Yes, ex officio sort of thing.
Yes, but they attended all the meetings, just to keep an eye on things from the county council's point of view. But more often than not, they were colleagues of Eva Hubbard.
Did she attended all the council meetings, did she, or was she only invited in?
No, she attended.
She attended, but she didn't chair them, presumably.
No.
Somebody else chaired.
We had our chairman, Major Chettle, Colonel Chettle.
I see. She got on well with him, did she, as well?
Oh, they were like that.
Were they really?
He was a lovely man, had a lovely wife. When he retired to a little cottage in Dorset. And before he'd been there very long, his wife died, and he wasn't long in following her. But they were a charming couple.
Was he there before Eva came?
Yes, yes. He'd been there some time.
I see. Mm. And did they see eye to eye about things?
Yes, indeed.
Mm. I mean, they believed
in her. They believed in Eva and her hunches. Mm. Eva had a hunch and liked to do this, that, or the other.
They delegated to her in the same way she delegated to other people.
That's right. Yes.
That's interesting. Yes. So that's a very important relationship between Major Chettle and her. And
yes,
just as important as your relationship with Miss Cowles.
Exactly, yes.
Yes, and they work, these relationships.
They do.
The whole thing works there.
The whole thing works very well indeed. There's no question about it.
Mm. Yes, that's very interesting. What about the Second War? Now, the bomb dropped when Eva wasn't there, didn't it? How did she cope with the reorganisation after the bomb dropped?
Well, as we all had to do the best we should. The place was a shambles, of course. That night, we'd been organising a certain number of classes for the employees of the British Railway in shelters, so-called shelters, under Waterloo Station. And members of the college teaching staff, tutorial staff, would go along there and run discussion groups and that kind of thing. And I'd been to one of these that particular evening. Oh no, that particular evening I hadn't. That particular evening I was off duty. I was home. Wasn't until the next night I went down to my local for a drink and heard from a chap that he'd just seen the worst accident he ever hoped to see in his life. A place not far from Waterloo Station had been hit, and there had been a lot of casualties, and I said, what sort of a place was it? He said, oh, it was some kind of school for men and women. And I said, you don't mean Morley College? That's it, he said, there's no Morley College, it's gone. That was my introduction to to the end.
So what?
Eva had been. Where she was? She wasn't at the college, I know. She hadn't been. But her daughters were involved somehow. One of them was in the Midlands, because the first thing she had to do was to dash up to the Midlands. Well, I appeared on the premises the next morning at college and had to introduce myself to the police and whatnot to gain access as best I could. And from then I organised a little party of students who hadn't other work to do. There wasn't much work about in those days. We got borrowed some picks and shovels and wheelbarrows and started cleaning the place up ourselves, digging ourselves a way in. An interesting point there. One, whilst we were on this job, a chappy, an oldish gentleman, came round the back of the buildings and said, who was in charge here? I said, well, I think I am probably. I introduced myself. Oh, he said, yes. Well, come and sit down with you. And we went and sat down on some concrete blocks and he said, I'm one of HM inspectors. It's my job to inspect places like Morley College. I said, oh, how do you do? So there's not much left of you. He was a nice, friendly old boy, and he helped us quite a lot in the reconstruction processes. But then we had to scout round. We had to go up to County Hall and enlist their help in. We wanted another place to work in, you see. The place was hopeless. We couldn't have done anything there at all. So, whilst things were being cleaned up, we wanted to find a place, half a school, or even less than half a school, where we could start again.
Eva had come back by this time, had she? And
Well, there was no point in her being down there at all, because there was no room for anybody. There was no way you could sit and stand or any else until things were put straight. And County Hall's theory was, oh well, we know all about Mooney, there's nothing left of it, you can't do anything. I said, but we want to do something about it. We want to find accommodation that we can put things together again. Well, what is it you want? We haven't any schools vacant. I said, well, we've been wandering around the district, and there's a little place called Johanna Street, where there was an old LCC school premise. I said, what about Johanna Street School down there? There doesn't seem to be any activity. Oh, well, the kids have been evacuated, and there won't be much been doing down there. I said, well, that just suits us to start with anyhow. They said, well, if it's any use to you, you make use of it. They were a bit obstructionists.
Yes, I see.
But then, of course, I had to look after the war damage aspect.
Yeah.
I got the War Damage Commission on the job. And they proposed writing us off as a dead loss, you see, and offering a compensatory fee. I said, that won't do at all. We're not demolished completely. We've lost a lot of the building, most of the building. But we should rebuild, and there are parts of the extension which can be repaired, and adapted, and we shall carry on there when it's clean, when things are tidied up.
And you own the land, presumably.
And we own the land, yes. So they agreed that they made a mistake, and they cancelled that original notice. They should have another thing. Well, that saved us a few £1,000, if not hundreds of pounds. Because the offer they'd made to us was about £50,000 for the destruction and recent re-election. Well, it wouldn't have bought a fraction of what we wanted.
So, what were Eva's ideas then about what the college should do after?
Well, once we'd got hold of Johanna Street, we decided, we had little meetings. First of the meetings was with Major Chettle in his office. He was an official of the previous War Damage Commission in Victoria, and he asked Mrs. Hubbard and I to go along to see him about the destruction and suggestions for what should be done. And I said, well, we have premises offered to us by the OCC for accommodating a few classes. And he said, well, get off and go and get on from there. You have my complete support, you know that. And so Mrs. Hubbard and I, and one or two of the tutors who were about, came in with us. And
Miss Cowles.
And Miss Cowles.
Yes.
And got cracking on this programme of classes in Johanna Street School. And we were due to open at Morley, had the building been there, on a date at the end of September, and within days of that we opened in Johanna Street School, small beginnings. One of the first of the tutors on that scheme was Dr. Jode. He took a small group there, the first, and we operated there on a Sunday morning and afternoon, and he was one of the first lecturers. I'll take a class, he said.
So anyway, you weathered the storm, really. Rather dangerous period.
Well, they could have closed us down from County Hall. As a matter of fact, I was told by our department at County Hall that they'd already booked me for a job at Wandsworth Technical Institute, who had lost their secretary. I said, I don't want another job. I still have a lot of work to do. More
She was very patriotic, Eva, wasn't she?
Oh, rather.
I mean, somebody said to me, I don't know who, that, you know, if we could imagine anyone having a bath in 1 inch of water, which is what you're supposed to do, or whatever it was, she would have done
She would have done it. She wouldn't have wasted it.
So presumably she was very keen to get it moving again and
make it useful. Oh, yes, indeed, yes. Once the Major Shetland approved the idea, she knew then she had the college council behind her, and we brought a number of students, and we had the reaction from the students. See, I collected half a dozen students, as I say, who were not doing any day work. They were down there first thing in the morning, digging their way through the rubble to get into the part of the extension that could be.
You patched up the extension, I suppose. Did you use that as well as the school?
Yes.
Until the war.
Well, that took some time even to patch it up.
Yes.
They had to put up makeshift windows where the window frames had been blown out. Well, one or two of those photographs or drawings there will give them an idea of
the
old Colville.
I see. Yes.
Very well.
Yes.
In connection with that was the feminine business.
Oh, was it? I see. Yes.
Education. What did they call themselves? The
National Education National Citizenship.
No, National Union. Before that.
Oh, the National Union of Societies for Equal
Citizenship. Well, Cynthia Colville was one of the leaders. Of course, she was the Queen's lady.
So that gave her the access.
That gave her access. And we had one or two other members of the College Council who were on speaking terms, anyhow, with royalty. And, we had several visits, and she was responsible for, Eva was responsible for all of them. There was the Queen Mother, who opened the new extension, the Morph extension. The recent one, of course, was the Queen herself and the new part. Then we had mural paintings in the, old building.
Whistler.
Which were destroyed.
Yes.
No, these were Revilliers.
Oh, yes, the replacements.
There were three artists involved. And Queen Mary came along, saw those, and was so thrilled with them, she visited the place three or four times. Just to see. We had a telephone call from Buckingham Palace, Her Majesty, the Queen Mother, or whatever, would like to come and see the paintings at Morley, when would be convenient, and so on.
And Eva got on well, did she, with Queen Mary? I mean, I suppose.
Oh, yes, indeed. Yes.
Did she?
Well, you've got a photograph there of her standing on the steps with Queen Mary. And as a matter of fact, the wife remembers Queen Mary. She was. I never had any time for that aspect of it. You see, I don't mind organizing, though, and putting the thing together, but once it's going, I like to
keep in the background.
Keep in the background, out of the way. And College Council, one or two of them, couldn't understand. One said, "Well, Mr. Cottrell, you'll be in." I said, "No, thank you very much. I'd rather not if you don't." But my younger son, the one that lives in Ilminster, he was only a kid at this age at the time. And he presented Queen Mary with a bouquet. And of course his mother was with him on the platform and shook hands with her majesty. And the snobbery of some people, well, that's why I wanted to keep in the background. Many of them came to the wife afterwards and wanted to shake her hands because she'd shaken hands with Queen Mary. You wouldn't believe it, would you?
Especially in a place like that.
Well, a place like that, but it just shows the mentality of something.
But, of course, that's another example of Eva's contacts
being
very valuable. I mean, whether one likes the monarchy or not, it's very useful, isn't it?
Yes, we shouldn't have had it without her.
No.
We had other people interested. Milliken was one who had contacts with royalty, and a Whitehall, of course. Quite a number of our people.
One thing is how she got these the college so central in the history of English music. I mean, she
yes.
got a lot
well,
of.
Well, that was music. That was Gustav Holst.
Yes, I see.
He was the kingpin there. Mm. He built up the choir and the orchestra in the old Vic in the old Waterloo Road days.
I see, so he's pre-Evo, really.
He's pre-Evo, yes. Oh yes, indeed.
Yes. Yes, I see. Did she get on well with him as well? I mean,
I don't think she may have met him once or twice, but...
She wasn't very closely involved with that aspect?
No. Mm. She was with Michael Tippett.
Was she?
Yes, she was very attached to Michael.
Because he was a conscientious objector, wasn't he?
He was.
Yes.
She sat on a committee about conscientious objectors, didn't she?
Did she? I didn't know that.
Anyhow, they released Tippett from his obligations as an objector, and he, in the slump, in 1900, Michael Tippett formed an orchestra of unemployed musicians working from Morley and in Morley. And that stood him in good stead, I think, apart from the fact that he deserved it.
Mm. So, anyway, that was a very important side of the college in
music,
long-term history.
Music from the word go.
Yes. Mm.
Yeah. I've seen only the last issue of the magazine that arrived. I noticed a letter from a student who'd been with one of the oldest music students at Morley to Thaxted in Essex, where they held an annual concert of Holst's works in local church. Mm. And she was reporting on it, and Miss Dulcie Nutting. Mm. Now, she'd been active in music at Morley from its beginnings in the old Vic, and still active. Mm. See, once a Morley student, once a Morleyite, as we call him, always on there.
What about politics, Mr. Cottrell? I mean, she was really sort of liberal come Labour, really, wasn't she? She wasn't really in the Labour Party until towards the end of her life, was she, really?
Well, she stood as a candidate for the Labour interest, you know, at Kensington. Mm. We helped canvass for her on that.
Yeah, in North Kensington.
North
yes.
Kensington.
Yes. But what I really wanted to ask you was, were there any difficulties about politics really at all in the school? I mean, she's got leftish sort of connections, hasn't she, really? Did that matter at all? Did it help?
Didn't seem to matter at all.
No. Mm. I mean, she didn't try to make it. It wasn't limited.
She didn't preach politics.
No.
Nobody did that. Mm. We were non-sectarian, non-party political, non-vocational, all the nons.
Yes.
We managed to get by very well.
Yes, yes.
And we had our students who had their own ideas and they formed their own societies within the college, you see, but I certainly never formed a Labour Party or a Tory Party.
But of course the LCC is very much Labour dominated in that
period,
isn't it?
Yeah.
And I suppose that must have helped quite a lot, because Eva knows so many of these people.
Mm.
She knew Morrison, for instance.
Oh Lord, yes. He elected to it. Well, that's another thing she introduced, was these public lectures by public people, you see, and from all parties, and all sides. Morrison was one of them. I ought to know them all off by heart. But
yes, I think some of them are mentioned in the book. I mean, they're quite a distinguished lot.
They are a distinguished collection.
Of course, you're very well placed in the sense of people can easily get to you in Moorish
Parish, can't they? Right in the centre of things.
Yes, I mean, even the Queen. I mean,
yes, indeed.
You're really quite
convenient
from that point of view. So it's well placed in that way. But she's also very good at just getting people as well. So it's ideal, really, isn't it? What do you think? I mean, you've read Diana Hopkinson's biography of her mother. Do you think that's right as a picture of her, or did you feel, yes, I agree with that, but I don't agree with this? I mean, does it fit with your picture of Eva?
Well, many things are connected with Maury. It does fit, but there's some things that don't ring true somehow, not in that book. I go much more on Dennis Richards' account of.
Of course, Diana Hopkinson didn't know very much about the Morley side.
She didn't,
anyway.
No. Only another interesting connection here at Ottery St. Mary, a great friend of Mrs. Hubbock, a college friend, she used to visit frequently on her trips down to Cornwall. You know, she used to go to Cornwall Cottage.
That's right, yes.
On the coast down at Trevias Cottage, I think.
Yes.
And Ottery made a good staging post for her, apparently, and used to call on this Miss Dickinson on her way down and stay with her on her way back to town. And I only discovered that accidentally, when we hadn't been here very long, and this Miss Dickinson died. The chappie who lives over the road, or dead, he's dead now. His wife was caretaker of the house where this Miss Dickinson lived. And he said to me, would you like to have a look over Miss Dickinson's place? They're preparing things for auction and one thing or the other. I said, yes, I would very much. And take the wife along to see it too. We didn't know anything about Miss Dickinson then. So he took us up there. And one of the rooms downstairs, a room half as big again as this, was just covered with books. Books are piled here, piled there, piled everywhere. And the wife's looking out, she said, look, there's one here about Mrs. Hubbock. And it was
Diana
Hopkinson's book on Mrs. Hubbard, lying at the top of it. And that house we can see from our front here, over on the other hill. I remember the occasion in the book, but I couldn't say I noticed anything. No, it was certainly a great shock to realise it was gone.
Did you feel she changed very much over the 20 years?
Well, she'd obviously. She was older, 20 years older, and it showed, but on the other hand, it didn't affect her.
She still went about things the same way?
Still went about things the same way. Always with a load of books and papers, either under her arm or in her handbag at the side.
What did she look like, actually, as a person? She's quite a big woman, wasn't she?
She was a big woman, yes. Do you know her sister? You've met her sister.
Winifred, yes.
Winifred. Well, there wasn't a lot to choose between them.
Quite big build.
Big build, yes.
Did she laugh a lot? Did she have a sense of humour, do you think?
No, strangely enough, she didn't. I don't remember her. She certainly hadn't a noticeable laugh. I mean, it wasn't a feature of her.
No. But she wasn't over serious either.
No. She was very normally very pleasant.
Yes.
And children, of course, it interested her tremendously. My youngsters were. My boys, two boys, were young at that time. And she was always glad to see them.
That's very interesting, because a lot of people have said to me that she she always had time to talk about personal things to people if they wanted to.
If they wanted to, yeah.
That is, she would try and help people solve their personal problems as well as, you know, problems concerning the college or whatever it might be. She was very good at getting people to work for her and to get their loyalty somehow to her by having enough time to listen to them about their own problems, if you see what I mean. So everything you say fits, really, with what I've been told by people. Is there anything else about her that you really think is important that we haven't discussed, that we ought to bring out?
There's been so many changes since she died that other things crowd in on the mind. And my memory is not what it was. It never was much, but...
it's a very good memory, actually.
It's, well, anything Maury, the old Maury, interests me straight away, but... I haven't grown out of it yet. I mean, the fact is, you see, that Maury was, from the start, a female institution.
Yes. Yes.
See, until Eva Hubbard died, there hadn't been a man principal on the staff at all. And in no time, you get two men. And I've never reconciled myself to that situation. I don't think I ever shall.
Yes. I mean, did it make a difference, women being so prominent? How did it make a difference?
Made it easier, generally.
Did it?
For the place to work, yes.
Why, do you think? I mean...
I don't know. Just the fact that it was feminine.
Yes. Yes. I mean,
Dennis Richards had quite a lot of, you wouldn't mind my saying so, of the feminine in his makeup. But, and Barry Till, of course, is a different kettle of fish altogether. He hasn't got the personality of Richards.
But the women, because Eva's very good at working with men, that's another thing that's important about her, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, she's one of those feminists who isn't anti-man at all.
Oh, no.
And I suppose that's rather important in Morley College, isn't it? You've got to be able to get on with men, but nonetheless you've got to get women to work with you as well.
Yeah.
So in a way she's ideal, I suppose, isn't she? Really, from that point of view. Yes. Yes, that's very interesting. But, you know, if anything else occurs to you... Did she really? I don't like... this was children of the students there, or whatever?
Not necessarily. Any children. And she... got members of the students' committee to help the fur arrangers. I know on one occasion, the last occasion, they had one of these parties. There was a kid, obviously a local, you see, right tag and bobtail, came into the building and said, could he go the party mister? I said, yes, that's all right. On his way in, he passed one of his student representatives, and the students stopped the kid and said, hey, where are you going, young man? I was all right, he says, I'm going in. I said, who said you could go in? Ginger-headed bloke with goggles, then. A ginger-headed bloke with goggles has been my passport.
So she organised, it was her idea?
Yeah, it was her, yeah, she funded it and...
Did she?
So there were, I don't know how many there were, quite a little hall full. Oh, anything for kids. She was all right.
She really liked children?
She did, no doubt about that at all.
So what did she do at these parties? Did she join in the games or what?
Well, I didn't see the workings of that party, but I should imagine she would, you know.
She was quite approachable, generally, wasn't she?
Absolutely, yes.
And you have to be in a place like Morley, you can't be stand-off.
Oh, you can't. I had enough of that. I mean, I said sometimes I was looked upon as a bit of an ogre myself, but that wore off.
Well, you have to stop the knives.
Visit it regularly, straighten things up. I don't think she lost very much, if Miss Carl was about to look after it. But she should lose things, as I say. She left things on the buses and trains, trams, regularly.
Because Miss Cowles worked in the library. She had a desk in the library, really.
That was in the reconstruction.
Oh, I see.
After the bombing.
And where did she work before then?
In the common room.
Oh, beside you with a desk of her own?
The two desks, one on either side of the common room.
Yes, I see. So you both worked in the same room, really?
Oh, yes.
I see. Yes. And she'd go in and out of Eva's room you would?
That's right.
Yes, I see. And you presumably do a lot of business with each other as well, wouldn't you, to say...
Well, it's as necessary.
Bother. But if you hadn't got on well together, you two, it could never have worked.
Well, it wouldn't have worked. We should have had to make different arrangements.
Yes. I think Eva was really quite demanding in a way, wasn't she? I mean, she expected you to be dedicated to the work, didn't she? I mean, she expected a lot from people.
Yes.
On the other hand, she'd give a lot to
them. She would, you're right. Yeah.
So it's a two-way thing, really. I seem to remember, was she forbidding at first? I mean...
No. It's just that...
She just didn't talk very much.
Actually, she was a bit deaf. Which made a difference.
What difference did that make then? Just that she couldn't exchange remarks very easily with people?
I can't. Just occasionally you wouldn't catch what she'd said, you see. And, I mean, I'm more than a bit deaf myself now, aren't I?
But she got over that shyness, didn't she?
Oh, yes. It was more shyness than anything, you see.
Yes, I see. And then gradually she got used to being, just getting on well with people as one has to in an institution. Because I know both her children...
An unfortunate, to some people, an unfortunate habit she had.
Yes.
Of wherever she was, wherever she was with, she couldn't care less. If there was wind to be passed, she'd pass it, frequently, she just staggered people, you see. She'd be walking along, and there'd be...
Extraordinary thing.
It never struck her.
Perhaps she didn't hear.
Well, possibly she didn't, but... she had one or two anecdotes of her own about people... and things. Sir Thomas Inskip at that time.
Oh, yes.
Well, she was walking down Victoria Street, she wouldn't be, with Sir Thomas. And she suddenly realised that her underclothes had dropped around her feet, you see. And being whistling up there, you see, she just stepped out and slipped through. And then Sir Thomas looked around, she'd gone.